Welcome to Behind the Headlines, where we're about to take you across the UK looking at some of the stories our reporters have been working on. In Scotland, we've been at the scene of a massive explosion. We've also been speaking to families of those killed a year ago during Hamas's attack in Israel, and services are being held to mark the anniversary today.
My family were held basically in hostage in their home for most of the day on October 7th. We were only liberated by the IDF quite late in the day.
And of course, we couldn't not talk about the lady in a wheelchair who's attempting to push herself all the way from John O'Groats to Land's End, which is a remarkable 874 miles.
One of the big things for me is showing people what they can do with what kit they have.
My name's Louise Easton, and I'm going to be your host over the next 10 minutes or so on Monday, the 7th of October, 2024. First, though, I'm going to start with this story from Newcastle, where a GP has admitted dressing himself up to hide his identity and then trying to kill his mother's partner by injecting him with poison. Henry Winter has the latest from court today, where Thomas Kwan has changed his plea to guilty. So, Henry, first, give us a bit of background here. What on earth was going on?
Well, this is all about a will and what was being left to Kwan in his inheritance. His mother decided to leave her home in Newcastle to her partner, 72-year-old Patrick O'Hara, with it only passing to her children in the event of his death. So Kwan decided to try and poison O'Hara with a fake COVID jab, which actually contained a poison. As a result, O'Hara developed a rare flesh-eating disease and parts of his arm actually had to be removed.
And Thomas Kwan really went to some lengths to try and get away with this, didn't he? Talk us through the disguise.
Yeah, this is where it gets really extraordinary. Kwan sent O'Hara fake NHS letters saying he was eligible for a home visit from a community nurse for a medical checkup. Kwan then carried out that visit himself, travelling to Newcastle with false number plates on his car and wearing a mask and glasses to disguise himself. Once he got there, he offered O'Hara a COVID-19 booster jab, even though he'd had one 3 months prior. The court heard Mr. O'Hara felt a terrible pain as soon as the injection was given.
So what happened today in court then?
Well, this is where the drama continued. So Kwan initially admitted administering a noxious substance, but said he only wanted to cause pain and discomfort, so denied attempted murder. However, after hearing the prosecution's opening statement in court last week, he's this morning decided to plead guilty.
OK, thanks, Henry. And Mr. Kwan is going to be sentenced on Thursday, so we'll be back at court for that one. Now, as I've mentioned, today is the 7th of October, which means exactly 1 year ago, Hamas carried out its deadly attack in Israel. 1,200 people were killed in a surprise rampage, and 97 hostages are either dead or still missing. The Prime Minister has described today as one of sorrow and grief, and services are being held across the country. Our reporter Katie Ahern's been in Hove this afternoon to meet some of the families affected.
Around 70 people have gathered here in Palmyra Square this afternoon, where the names of those who lost their lives are being read out. One of those was Adam Mahanit's cousin. She was 18 when she was killed by the militant group, which is something he says keeps him awake at night.
She was murdered on October 7th and never got to even experience the first few weeks of adulthood. She had a whole life ahead of her. She was a talented volleyball player. She just fell in love. She had a boyfriend, and that was all stolen from us.
To this day, her father remains a hostage in Gaza and doesn't even know if the rest of the family are still alive.
Well, in addition to those services, vigils are also being held tonight. Our reporter Amelia Salmons is at one in Birmingham's Victoria Square, where hundreds are gathering.
I'm stood in Birmingham city centre, where candles are being laid out, ready to light up the high street for this evening's peace vigil. It's to mark the 1 year anniversary of the war on Gaza. You might actually be able to hear the chatter from the people who've just arrived, from all walks of life. Muslim leaders, Jewish rabbis, Christian representatives, people of all faiths and none are here this evening to remember those who have lost their lives in the conflict.
Right, let's go to Scotland now, because it's been nearly 24 hours since an explosion in Clackmannanshire killed one man and injured two more. Emergency services are still at the scene, and our senior reporter Jack Foster has sent us this report.
An ordinary Sunday evening on Alloa's Kelly Place, shattered by the sound of a huge explosion and fireball on this residential street.
Oh my God.
CCTV from the neighbouring Alba restaurant shows onlookers jumping from their cars and running towards the scene. Gary Singh was one of them.
We chapped the doors, got everyone out, the surrounding neighbours and stuff. There was a man screaming help from one of the buildings.
We heard that as well, but then by that point the fire brigade came, the police came and stuff like that, and at that point you just take a step back and think, right, they're here now, let them do their job.
Locals living in the neighbouring streets said the explosion shook many of them.
Reverberated throughout the whole building, you kind of really felt it.
The next time I come up to the park, I've seen smoke.
I heard the bang.
Right,
it's just like a bomb going off.
The exact cause of the blast hasn't yet been confirmed, but gas engineers have been working at the scene. A man was killed and three others were injured.
Jack Foster reporting there. Now, we'll go to Northern Ireland, where we have a report on the First Minister, Michelle O'Neill, who says she's deeply sorry for the reputational damage caused to a charity. It's during the aftermath of how Sinn Féin dealt with former press officer and now child sex offender Michael McMonagall. Our chief reporter James Gould has this from our Stormont studio.
Michael McMonagall was suspended by the party after his arrest in 2021. He then went on to work for the British Heart Foundation in 2022, getting references from two other Sinn Féin press officers who resigned just over a week ago. Photographs appeared of Michelle O'Neill just metres away from McMonagall at an event in Stormont last year. She says she did not see him. Today, Michelle O'Neill addressed MLAs.
I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. Of course, this is something that we right up there in terms of my priority list of issues to be concerned about.
The First Minister added that she will do everything to make sure a situation like this never arises again. McMonagall is awaiting sentencing.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines. The case of a missing Bristol student who vanished without a trace 7 months ago has now been shown on the telly. 23-year-old Jack O'Sullivan disappeared after leaving a house party in the Hot Wells area of the city back on the 2nd of March. Our chief reporter in the southwest, James Diamond, joins me from Bristol, very close to where Jack was last seen. James, just remind us of what happened, first of all.
Sure. So, yeah, as you said, we know Jack went to a party on the evening of Friday, the 1st of March, on a street called Hotwell Road. If you don't know the city, in the daytime, it's a very busy road which runs adjacent to the city's harbourside. He left that party in the early hours of Saturday and is seen on CCTV twice trying to flag down cars. It's thought for a lift home. A person thought to be him is then spotted on camera crossing a road bridge over the harbourside called the Plimsoll Bridge, back towards the party. Several cars pass the person by, but the trail then goes totally cold.
OK, so what's the latest on this?
Well, the police and his family are adamant someone must know something. So this morning, the case appeared on Crime Watch for the first time, with a plea urging anyone with even the slightest bit of information to come forward. This was Catherine, his mum, speaking to me at their home a few weeks ago.
I need an answer. I'm not prepared to just say, well, my son's not come home and I'm not going to know. I can't move forward. That's where I am. I'm still stuck on the 2nd of March.
And James, you're based in Bristol, so physically closer to the story than I am. What sort of attention is this getting locally?
It's a huge story here. A Facebook group of supporters trying to help has got more than 70,000 members. It's called simply Find Jack, if you want to take a look. There's even a hot air balloon now branded with Find Jack on the side, which flew in the big ballooning events here in the summer.
OK, thanks, James. And sadly, we're going to stay with the subject of missing people because it's been a week since a woman disappeared in North York. 34-year-old Victoria Taylor was last seen at her home in Moulton last Monday morning. Our senior reporter Karen Liu has spent the afternoon with police search teams and she also joins me now. Karen, what's the latest on this one?
I'm just along the riverbank where the regional marine and underwater search unit is currently using sonar technology to look under the water. Officers are in a green boat looking intensely at the computers on board. They're focusing here today as a number of personal possessions belonging to Victoria have been found close to the River Derwent.
And today marks 7 days since Victoria was last seen.
Yeah, she was last seen at her home address in Moulton at 9am last Monday. And CCTV shows her at the BP garage on Wellham Road in the northern area of Moulton around 2.5 hours later. Victoria's described as white, approximately 5'6" in height. She was last seen wearing blue jeans, a black Adidas original puffer jacket with white stripes down the sleeves and a grey Jack Wills hooded jumper.
And Karen, what about Victoria's family? How are they feeling?
Well, as you can imagine, imagine Victoria's family say they currently feel sick, distraught and lost following her disappearance, but are thankful of the community's support. They also say they're trying to focus on the children in the family to maintain a sense of routine at this difficult time.
OK, thanks, Karen. Indeed, a really difficult time for her poor family there. That was our senior reporter, Karen Liu, in Moulton in North Yorkshire. Now, this is a heartwarming story from the Northwest. Following an emotional plea, lots of people have turned out for the funeral of a veteran from Bury who has no known family. Derek Thompson died at the age of 92 in August. Our reporter Olivia Davis was in Radcliffe for us and sent us this report.
Strangers, friends and veterans came together here to celebrate the life of Derek. The breakfast club where Derek went to every single Friday was worried that nobody would come and give him a proper send-off. But after a successful social media post, his neighbour Saskia says she's so grateful to the many who came to say goodbye.
Every time you saw him, he just had a smile on his face, just positive, like, just so lovely and friendly. I just loved him. I didn't want him to have a funeral on his own. I mean, I'm just so happy that everyone's turning up for him. It's lovely.
Well, the Borough of Bury's Veteran Associations thanked everyone who turned up or gave them flowers and cards.
And last but certainly by no means least, we're going to talk about a woman who not only wants to travel between Land's End and John O'Groats, she's attempting to do that in a non-powered wheelchair. The distance is 874 miles by road. So Lexi Chambers, a former army veteran and ex-nurse, is doing a similar distance to a marathon every day. She started this challenge in August and has now reached Cornwall. Our chief reporter Andrew Kay went to meet her.
Just one of the many streets which schoolchildren line to cheer Lexi on.
All the way through from the top of Scotland, running alongside the car and chucking money in the car, and incredible.
The 46-year-old tells me some of the hills in Wales, Scotland and parts of Somerset and Devon were so steep she was almost tipping backwards.
Nothing can prepare you for hills like that. Psychologically, I prefer not to know what's coming the day ahead, so the team know. They're basically told not to tell me.
And in fact, she was advised by the NHS to not do it in a standard wheelchair, but she chose to ignore that.
One of the big things for me is showing people what they can do with what kit they have. You know, just because people say that they're not really built for doing this kind of thing, which the NHS will say, unfortunately. I got told the same thing, you know, you shouldn't be doing marathons in your normal chair. And it's like, well, why not? It's my legs.
And after finishing her daily wheelchair marathon, she's stopping at rugby grounds to promote the women's game.
To demonstrate to people how incredible the sport is and how inspirational the women are that play it. A couple of clubs around the country last year that closed down. So Wasps, Worcester Warriors, again, a club that's been around for a very, very long time, and they went into administration because of costs and they couldn't keep going.
Lexi is due to finish and arrive at Land's End on Thursday.
And if you'd like to find out any more about any of those stories we've been talking about today, head over to the news pages of our website, or you'll find the links on our socials as well, and be sure to come back again tomorrow when we'll continue to take you behind the headlines.